Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This time on Homicide.
You have three sightings of a light-coloured Holden panel van, and on each occasion, there's a young boy standing beside it.
My heart absolutely stopped. I missed a beat.
What if that was Terry's blood on those overalls?
He got quite upset, quite irate. He said, "I'm sick of this." It was an impulsive attack. That changed the course of this investigation.
Terry Floyd, Part 2.
Terry Floyd was a 12-year-old boy that went missing on the 28th of June, 1975. So in 2000, when I recommenced this investigation of the disappearance of Terry Floyd, after going through the file, identifying all the potential suspects, I dug deeper into the name of Raymond Jones. And at the time that Terry disappeared, Raymond Jones was on bail for sexually assaulting a young boy in a toilet block in Ballarat. And when you look at the circumstances surrounding that, it was an impulsive attack. Raymond Jones has gone into the toilet block. He didn't know this person, but he's attacked this young boy and sexually assaulted him. In 1975, two or three days after Terry went missing, the local police from Ballarat go and talk to Jones, and that's when he makes his statement. He's not formally interviewed, but he makes a statement. And he said that he was chopping wood with his friend Graham Wardlaw in Avoca that day. Later on in the day, they went to a service station which was closed. It was called Rikers. And Wardlaw had a key and they'd worked on a car there. The two detectives from Ballarat ask him what he was wearing on the day that Terry disappeared. He says, "A pair of overalls." He then produces the overalls and they have a look at them. They got a large stain on them. Could it be blood? They then take them away for examination. The proper time to interview Raymond Jones was then. But Raymond Jones wasn't interviewed until 1979, formally as a suspect. I can't answer that other than to say they were 4 years too late. So in 1979, the detectives from Ballarat formally interview him at Mildura, and they ask him, "Well, can you tell us what the stain was on your overalls?" Now, to me, that was an odd question, because if you've had the overalls tested, you would know what the stain is. I should be able to say, "You know, we took your overalls, it had a stain on it. We've got to tell you that's grease, we've got to tell you that's animal blood, or it's human blood." But they're asking him to tell the investigators what the stain is. From memory, I think his answer is, "I don't know." And that's it. I can't find the overalls and I can't find a record of them ever being examined.
My name's Keith Moore. I've been a journalist for more than 40 years. With the report at the time that talked about these overalls, it's one of the frustrating things that with DNA the way it is now, like, you know, what if that was Terry's blood on those overalls? Wouldn't, look, having said that, Jones was a mechanic and, you know, he wore overalls and he lay under cars and got dripped on by oil. So it's not necessarily significant, but you just wish somebody had put it in a plastic bag and frozen it so that now we could test it for DNA, but the chance is gone.
So to move this forward, what I had to do was go back and formally interview Raymond Jones. It was March 2001. I went to the home where I knew Raymond Jones was living with his wife and two children. I knocked on the door and the door was answered by his wife. Raymond came out. I said to him, I want you to come back to the police station. I want to formally interview you in relation to the disappearance of Terry Floyd. He got quite upset, quite irate. He said, I'm sick of this. You blokes have been hounding me for years. And I said, hang on a minute, Ray. You haven't been spoken to since 1979. So no one's hounded you, no one's harassed you, but I would like you to come back. So Raymond's account for the 28th of June 1975 was that he left Avoca around 4:45. He wanted to go home and have a shower because he was coming back to meet his friend Graham at the Avoca Hotel for dinner. Now, at that time, Terry Floyd standing on the side of the road. So when I interview Raymond Jones and I say to him, Ray, surely you saw a young boy on the side of the road? He says, no, I didn't see anyone. And I think I said to him, well, it's nearly impossible because on your own account, you say you leave Avoca at about 4:45. I'm sure you would have passed him or seen him because you have a period of time between, say, 4:45 and 5:15, so you're only looking at 30 minutes, but you have three sightings of a light-coloured Holden panel van. And on each occasion, there's a young boy standing beside it. And as I say to him in the interview, it's ironic that you have a 1968 HK Holden panel van. But he says, I didn't see him.
I don't know that anybody driving along what is a very quiet road at, you know, 4:35 o'clock on an afternoon that wouldn't see a kid walking along the road or sitting by a post waiting for a lift. Dare I say it, particularly if you're a paedophile and attracted to young boys. I just find it very hard to believe that that somebody like Johns wouldn't have noticed that.
So eventually I work out from time and re-interviewing witnesses that he didn't get back to Avoca until 7:30 at night. And we know that because he was going to meet his mate Graham Wardlaw at the Avoca Hotel for dinner. But when he arrived at the hotel, the meals were going off because the kitchen was closing. So the round trip is 20 minutes to Maribor, 20 minutes back to Avoca, and he said the only thing he did at Maribor was have a shower. Let's give him 20 minutes. So I think his time is out and there's about an hour and a half which he hasn't accounted for or he's tried to cover up. Then I found a document written by Dr. Alan Bartholomew, who was the head psychiatrist at Pentridge Prison back in 1975. He prepared a report in relation to a bail application of Raymond Jones. That document changed the course of this investigation. On the 28th of June 75, Raymond Jones was out on bail for sexually assaulting a young boy in a toilet block. He'd been remanded in custody, but he applied for bail, and part of the opposition to the bail was that the forensic psychiatrist, Alan Bartholomew, at Pentridge, wrote a letter to the court saying Jones was an impulsive person who couldn't control his urges. And it went further than that, and it said, this man, Raymond Jones, has the potential to kill.
It's another one of the strong pieces of circumstantial evidence that point to Raymond Jones being a suspect and the prime suspect. Because, you know, A, we've got the propensity to murder, the exact words of Alan Bartholomew. The fact that he's on bail, the fact he admits he's in the area at the time, that he'd been driving past the road, the fact that it's obviously unusual to have a 12-year-old boy by the side of the road that you'd think you would remember seeing it. He claims he didn't. You've got the three sightings of a vehicle similar to his. It all points to Jones being considered as a suspect.
I got to the point where I had a complete inquest brief. Raymond Jones was invited to be represented at the inquest because I was going to name him, but either he or his solicitor at the time decided that he didn't need representation, because at the end of the day, the coroner can't force him to give evidence for the fear of self-incrimination.
Terry's sister Cheryl and brother Darryl had been waiting decades for answers.
Finally, we had our day in the coroner's court in 2001.
For 26 years, Terry Floyd's family has postponed a memorial service in the hope that his body might be found. The inquest is the first official acknowledgement of the young footballer's death.
We all went to the hearing in Melbourne. It was a huge step, you know. There was a chance that something could come out of it.
There's still some people to be interviewed. Maybe down the track, yes, someone might be charged.
It's unusual for a homicide squad detective to actually nominate a suspect as strongly as Ron did in the case of Raymond Jones, in that, you know, they prefer to call them persons of interest, and, you know, he's, yes, we haven't been able to exclude them, but he certainly points the finger very strongly at him being a strong suspect.
To name someone publicly and at a public inquiry is a fairly big step. There can always be ramifications of being sued, but what I was saying was the truth. Three sightings of a panel van which he had similar. At all three occasions, a young boy standing by the panel van. An hour and a half missing in his timeline, and the fact he's on bail for a serious sexual assault of another young boy. He can't be eliminated. The coroner delivered an open finding. He found that Terry was deceased by unknown means. He didn't even say he was murdered. He didn't even say anyone was responsible. I think one of the propositions that was put there was that Terry might have just walked away, re-established himself in a new life. This is a young kid who's 12. It's 1975. I don't think he's faked his own disappearance. Could he have been run over? Well, we would have found his body. If he's committed suicide, we would have found his body, or someone would have found it. Did he die of natural causes? He didn't have an illness. So you can rule out just about everything other than homicide.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I think the finding for myself in a professional capacity was disappointing. But for the family, it was devastating.
Very deflating to take all that in, knowing that this is a person possible. Ron had put a lot of work into this. He spent 16 months compiling a report for the coroner to hopefully finally get charges laid, maybe.
I was frustrated to hear it because I thought, I don't know, just think of an inquest. You got a suspect. Surely they can do something more now. That's, how much more do you need? It's probably frustrating knowing that we had all that information, but you still couldn't do anything.
The question is, why isn't Jones charged? The Crown must prove the case beyond reasonable doubt. There are four or five pieces of evidence which indicate that it's Jones, but I think it's not strong enough to actually charge him. So the inquest is finished. 9 years have gone by and there's still no answers for Terry's family. Then 2010, Terry's brother Darryl gets a tip-off.
A certain person gave me some information that Raymond Jones was responsible for Terry's disappearance and that he put him down a mineshaft. At that point in time, I informed Ron. I told him what had just been told to me. He said, leave it with me.
The last sighting of Terry was at Bung Bong Hill. That's halfway between Avoca and Maryborough. There's a track which goes off into the bush for about 300 metres and leads down to Morningstar Mineshaft. That was the closest mineshaft to where Terry disappeared. So in the end, after negotiating, Victoria Police agreed to dig the mineshaft to see if we could find Terry.
It's tough work. The 20-metre mineshaft has to be dug out bucket by bucket. Homicide Squad detectives are on scene. If human remains are found, they'll take over the case.
At the time, Darryl thought it was going to take about 3 weeks. The Department of Mines sadly had given Darryl a bit of a bum steer because it's a heck of a lot deeper than the 15 to 20 metres that he'd originally been told. What you have to remember is that was a massive hole that everybody in Avoca used to dump all sorts of stuff down there. I'm talking armchairs, I'm talking bits of animal, I'm talking household rubbish, all sorts of stuff. There wasn't a tip, you know, so they just used this area, and particularly this mine, as a tip.
It was a laborious task. Basically, you had a rubbish bin that went down a mine shaft. There was a guy at the bottom putting rubbish in. The rubbish would come up. We would then put it on like a wire mesh screed and it'd all be shaken, and then you would pick pieces out of there. We found numerous bones. Sometimes I would photograph the bone, send it to a pathologist in Melbourne who would look at it, and then I would get the answer, no, Ron, that's an animal bone. A local butcher used to use the mine shaft as a dumping ground for his offal and bones from his butcher shop.
I've spoken to Darryl. He wants to find Terry, but he doesn't want to find, like, he doesn't want to see a skull come up, for example, except that he does, because if the body's found, there might be some evidence attached to it that might provide a clue to who might have abducted and murdered Terry.
Darryl's done months and months of backbreaking work digging a mine shaft. He doesn't have anything to show for it. Then all of a sudden, that changes.
We found a sterling silver necklace that was hung up on a sharp rock on the side of the shaft. My heart absolutely stopped. I missed a beat, because I knew when Terry went missing that he owned a sterling silver necklace. As kids, we did a paper round together and we both brought necklaces from the local jewellers. So I knew the sort of necklace Terry had and how much it meant to him. This necklace was taken into the jewellers for examination. He examined the necklace and was able to say that that necklace is from the 70s era, so he could confirm it was from that time that Terry went missing.
I took it out to the forensic science laboratory in an effort to see if we could find any DNA on the necklace. But as I said to Darryl, look, realistically, there's issues. You've personally handled it. You will have similar DNA to Terry. The jewellers handled it. So in the end of it all, you yourself can't say 100% that's Terry's. So we got to the point where I think we were down maybe 50, 60 metres, and some of the material which we were pulling up then was pre-1975. So in the end, we made a decision that we can't keep going on forever. You know, I remember the final day of digging, and I remember having a conversation with Darryl and saying, that is it. Sadly, we didn't find Terry, it's now time to move on. Daryl, I don't want you to become the victim here. Yes, you've lost your loved one, you've lost your brother, but I've seen situations like this where family destroys themselves because they're so obsessed in finding something. And he said, you're not the only person that's told me that. And I said, well, you draw a line in the sand and we should move on. But I think it was 2 or 3 months later, Daryl came back again and he said, I want to dig another mine shaft. I think Terry's there.
I still kept going. Some years later, in 2017, we found a upper half of a leather shoe.
Daryl Floyd is hopeful it belongs to his older brother, Terry. It's just like the pair the 12-year-old was wearing when he vanished in 1975.
It is a kid's shoe. It's a size 6. We have replica shoes on site and we've married them up beside that, and it's the spitting image and spitting size of that particular shoe.
If we accept that those are Terry's items, then I would have expected to find human remains in that mine shaft, and we didn't. We're now 10 or 11 years on and Daryl hasn't given up hope.
Ron suggests, look, you've got to walk away at some point. You can't keep taking this emotional burden on. Enough is enough. But from a family's perspective, you just got to get answers. You're sitting at the top watching every bucket come out and thinking each bucket might contain or hold your brother's remains. That's a fairly big thing to deal with on a day-to-day basis. It does take its toll. Sorry.
It's Daryl's obsession. And he's always wanted to be able to find him for Mum and Dad's sake as well as his own. And I've said to him a couple of times, perhaps it's time you walked away. We haven't found anything. You just can't keep pouring money down that hole. But he just won't give up.
If ever anybody in my family or if you know anybody goes missing, you'd want a brother like Daryl. I'm sure if Daryl tomorrow found somebody who said, no, 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 it wasn't that mine, it's that one 10 miles away, I reckon he'd dig that one up as well.
I believe that this is the last roll of the dice. I believe there is someone in the community that can put the last piece of this jigsaw together.
In my opinion, Ron Eddles is a really wonderful man. I just think if it hadn't been for him, we would never have had an inquest. So I'm really proud that he took the time to listen to us all those years ago.
My experience in investigating homicides over a long period of time is that the name of the killer is always in the file. I've got to tell you, Raymond Jones' name is in the file. And I'll say, on the balance of probabilities, it has to be Jones.
Raymond Jones was 23 at the time that Terry disappeared, now in his 70s. Look, in the back of her mind, I think, what if he's dying of cancer and he's got 3 days left to live? Is he a decent enough human being to put everybody out of their misery and say, I did it? I don't know, I suspect not. I suspect that if it was him, that will go to his grave with him.
So, back in early 1976, the government established a reward for information. It was $5,000. By 2000, we moved that to $100,000. The reward now is for $1 million for information leading to the arrest of the person or persons responsible for Terry Floyd's disappearance and death. I know absolutely 100% someone has that information. This family has been waiting many, many years. They deserve an answer.
This is Homicide with Ron Idles, created by CJZ Productions. Location producer, Catherine Ledingham. Post producers, Mark Barlin and Anthony Griffiths. Edited by Philippa Rollins, Anne Kerr and Jeremy Mather. Original music by Amara Primero for Prime Accord Music. Audio mix by Simon Hicks at Cutting Edge. Executive producers, Paula Bycroft and Andrew Farrell.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.